Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Tuesday, January 17th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Classy Day.
Classy?
Yeah, when we celebrate those who are graced with the ability to live their lives with class, passion, and driven to share it with others. Classy people draw others to them. They have a grace and knack for bringing light into a room with humor, beauty, and inspiration. For example, the late great American comedian and actress Betty White was graced with a seemingly unlimited ability to make us laugh. Her humor transcended age and gender and race, and her vibrant energy was, well, it was contagious. Knowing her or someone like her is a truly unforgettable experience that lives beyond a single moment. Perhaps she said it best in her book, Footprints. Quote, "Everybody needs a passion. That's what keeps life interesting. If you live without passion, you can go through life without leaving any footprints." Amen to that. Class act indeed, Melody.
Mm-hmm. I always liked Betty White. She did. You know, no matter where you saw her, who she was with, no matter whatever, you know, she always put a smile on your face. You know, she walked in the room, you smiled. So that's what people do with me. I walk into a room and people smile.
I know.
No. I don't have that charm. But yeah, it's she was a very nice lady. Very nice lady. You don't hear any bad rumors about Betty White. But there's a little bit of a bad rumor today going around as we look to gold. There's a bad rumor out there that gold is down $7 at 1909. Had a high of 1917. Silver was down 35 cents, still at $24. Platinum was down 21 at 1,050. Palladium was down 11 at 1,811. The USDX today was stronger, barely, by 0.01 right now at the 102.38. Crude oil is back up over 81, and that was up $1.17. Paper markets today, the Dow was down almost 400 points. And that is 33,910. S&P was down 8, 39.90. NASDAQ was up 15, 11,095. I think the European markets were pretty much positive. The FTSE was negative, just barely. Asia, looks like Nikkei was the only positive one. 10-year yield, 3.548. So that's to the upside today, just very little. And natural gas, 3.66, up 7%. Up 7%. So probably be a good – no, I should have bought some auctions on it last week. Options on it last week. But anyway, let's see, because we knew it was going to be turning around. Surprising, I saw where Bitcoin, Dave, is up over 21,000. But, you know, you have these same – high-profile people coming out there, pitching it, telling people they need to buy it, and that's why you're seeing the price rise. And it doesn't have anything to do with fundamentals. It's just based on pitchmen, and that's what Ponzi schemes are. I think we're going to talk a little bit about some of the one of the cryptocurrencies that's out there that people can't get their money out of, and so that's. But you know, they'll draw in all the suckers right now. And that's what these pitchmen do. They get paid to bring in the people, and they're very good at it. Scaramucci is the one that I'm thinking of, and like he's got a really good – like I really would trust that guy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's, you know, it's just – it's interesting to watch it, especially when you're not involved in it. Then you can really see through. But, of course, when you're involved in it, you're not going to look at any of the – negatives about it. You're just going to think all the positives because you think that your money is going to turn you into another millionaire or billionaire. But too good to be true, folks. Most likely, it probably is. Where do we want to start today? I guess. I've been following a little bit about what's been happening over in Davos, Switzerland, and you know, it's of course we don't look. You know, these are all the elite that guide the world's politics and politicians. You know, it's where they all make their deals to see what can be done. And so, yeah, I'm not a really fan over these folks. And I don't think it's news, too much news, that over the past couple years, of course, the richest 1% of the people have accumulated close to 2/3 of all new wealth created around the world. That shouldn't be any surprise to anybody. $42 trillion in new wealth was created since 2020. So while you were in the pandemic, being locked up in your house, losing your job, many people lost their businesses. $42 trillion in new wealth was created by, I guess, the 1%, or at least 63% of that was amassed by the 1%. Everybody else, 99% of the global population collected just $16 trillion of the new wealth. A billionaire gained roughly $1.7 million for every $1 of the new global wealth. And and a lot of that global wealth is based on a lot of our taxpayers' money subsidizing all of these multinational corporations. So these multi-1%ers can, of course, amass the wealth. So they should at least say thank you, U.S. taxpayers. Dave?
Well, Melody, one of the questions about this then is, well, how do we resolve this growing inequality, if you will?
You don't.
And reasonable people will debate this and disagree over what Gabriella Boucher, who's the executive director of Oxfam International, says is the solution. That is, taxes to be increased on the ultra rich.
It's not going to happen.
Which she didn't define, although she calls it a strategic precondition to reducing inequality and resuscitating democracy. In the report's press release, she also said that changes to taxation policies would help tackle other crises around the world. That it's time we demolish the convenient myth that tax cuts for the richest result in their wealth somehow trickling down to everyone else. She calls these coinciding crises around the world as polycrisis, not sure for what reason. In recent weeks, though, researchers and economists and politicians alike have suggested that the world is currently facing such a polycrisis as all these different pressures collide, from the inflation and other major issues. Just another side of the roller coaster, Melody, starting to spin off the tracks. It's going to be a crazy year, I do believe.
I mean, we just really know that. I mean, taxing the rich, that's just not going to work. I mean, that if anything, it would make it worse. It would create an even a bigger divide, you know, because they're not going to have it coming out of their pocket. They got too much wealth that they can move it. They got tax. They got lawyers. They know where all the loopholes are at. And all these politicians who said we're going to tax the rich, where do you think they get all their wealth? It's from these same people that they keep from taxing. So it's, you know, no matter debate's not going to change anything. This is the world that we live in, and it's going to continue to get worse. And the day of reckoning for all this will come. And it's not going to be by choice that everything becomes a little more things. There will be a lot of wealth lost, but they're not going to feel it as bad as the guy out there on the street. I mean, he certainly will feel it the most. Unilever, the CEO, said that today's prices would likely continue to rise. in the near term, adding that his firm had a playbook for high inflation, thanks to its business dealings in markets like Argentina and Turkey. He says, for the last 18 months, we've seen extraordinary input cost pressure. It runs across petrochemical products, agricultural products, energy, transport, logistics. It's been feeding through for quite some time now, and we've been accelerating the rate of price increases that we've had to put into the market. He said, so far, the consumer response in terms of volume softness has been very muted. The consumer out there has been very resilient. So, yeah, all by debt. Now, you can be real resilient out there as long as you have all the credit cards that you need, because you're certainly not doing it in your wages unless you're working 3 and 4 jobs. He says, we do see the prospect of higher volume elasticity as winter energy cost hits. As household saving levels come down, that buffer goes away, and as prices continue to rise. He said the Unilever published its third quarter results for 2022 with the firm reporting price growth of 12.5%, Dave. So it continues.
Yeah, this is just one example. Unilever has a big global footprint, owns brands like Ben & Jerry's ice cream, Magnum ice cream, and Walls. I'm not familiar with them. Personally, I've seen Ben & Jerry's pints of ice cream. The pints now go from $4.99 just 2-3 years ago to $6.99 and $7.99 today. He observed nobody's running a business at the moment has really lived through global inflation. It's a long time since we've had it. He added that we might be around peak inflation, but not peak prices. There's further pricing to come through, but the rate of price increases is probably peaking around now. So again, he talked about that playbook and company used to high levels of inflation, again, from doing business in South America, Turkey, parts of Southeast Asia, et cetera. And so he concludes, it's not that we've taken more price. We just started acting earlier than many of our peers, and the guidance that we've been getting from our investors is they support that and feel that's an appropriate action. Yeah, God bless the shareholders, Melody. Who cares when it's just about them? Unfortunately, it's no doubt a pricing strategy shared by many of Unilever's peers.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting that he did break out the, inflation versus peak pricing. And I don't think we're coming around to peak prices yet, but certainly in various items, you might find it in some, but there's others that I think is going to continue for a long time. And we're always going to have this inflation because they're not addressing the real cause of inflation. That's the problem. And, it all comes back to the rates. It all comes back to Powell. Is he going to go up? Is he going to go down? How much more can the global debt handle higher rates? I mean, there's a lot of factors into this. And I'm not quite sure he's used to high levels of inflation from doing business in places like Argentina, Turkey, or parts of Southeast Asia. But what about doing and dealing with high levels of inflation coming from Europe and the U.S.? I think it's a little bit different. I don't know if your business practices remain the same no matter what, but I would think it's a little bit different. And because you would have a little more confidence in like the United States, but, and that confidence can bite you just as easy as, Argentina or Turkey. I don't know. That's kind of an interesting to see how it would break down, with your first world countries versus, Argentina and so forth, Venezuela. But anyway, coming soon to a town near you or TV near you, you're going to hear a whole lot about the debt ceiling. We've been talking about this a lot lately, and you're going to probably hear a little bit more. We saw, we talked about Janet Yellen yesterday. She informed congressional leaders on Friday that the federal government is likely hit the debt limit this week. And they're going to have to take extraordinary measures to keep paying creditors who own the U.S. government bonds. These measures are things like running down Treasury cash balances and delaying making payments to certain government pension funds and to make sure there's enough money to pay bondholders. I think her timing on her trip overseas corresponds with making sure that payments are made to bondholders and to the creditors who owns those government bonds. And I think that's why she's – this is my personal opinion, and I think that's why she's going out to visit the Chinese finance minister also. We know how much debt they own. So I really do believe that's a part of it. And you know what, Dave? I'm going to do this real quick before I finish this. I woke up in the middle of the night last night, and I turned
on – Are you worried about the debt ceiling?
Oh, definitely. But I did turn on Bloomberg, believe it or not. Hey. 2 o'clock in the morning, I turned on Bloomberg, and it was really interesting because they were talking about Biden's infrastructure, inflation reduction. I have to laugh every time I say it, but they were talking about how actually Yellen is also going to be discussing this bill because there's a lot of European countries and other nations that are upset with that. How it's going to compete. And that wasn't the part that disturbed me. The part was that they're going to change it. There was reference that there'd be discussions and negotiations. And I'm thinking to myself, well, whether you like this thing or not, which I don't, what right does other nations have to begin debating and dealing about something that was passed here, whether it was good or bad? And I tried to go back this morning to see if I could find those interviews and so forth. So yes, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and yes, I still do believe I was wide enough awake to know what I heard, and I didn't think I was getting it distorted, and I was just shocked at what I was hearing. So I mean, we'll have to follow that and see if. Guess I'm going to have to set my alarm clock every night for 2 o'clock, but yeah. we'll have to see if we find any more information about that. But I kind of found that disturbing. So anyway, and I'm real disturbed because we have a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. My buddy's got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living, working, working for a living. Working for a living, never, never working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Lost my radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby all the night. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. And of course, make sure you tune in tomorrow. We're going to be talking about 90% silver. So we're going to give you the breakdown on that, and I'm also going to do some sharing some stories that I'm hearing about some of those TV gold and silver dealers that just reap you over the coals with pricing. And, I mean, it's just amazing that they can actually get away with it. But if you're not just because they're on TV doesn't make them a better company than somebody that isn't. And I just get shocked every time. And I have a classic example today on a French rooster, Frank. And the comparison with gold at 1900 versus a couple of months ago when it was 1700. And it's just incredible. So we'll be sharing that with you tomorrow along with the 90% silver. And just to finish up, I just want to finish up with the debt ceiling. I think that was, it's going to be there. The extraordinary measures, if they close government, it's no big deal. They've done it before and they're going to do it again. They'll take it down to the wire each and every time. And everybody's going to act like, oh my gosh, isn't it horrible? Isn't it this? Isn't it that? And it's the same old thing. One of these days, though, it won't be the same old thing, Dave. But until then.
Until then, yeah. I talked a little bit, we'll call it a debt limit primer in today's third segment. So stick around for that.
All right. We got, and again, these guys are funny. Three major banks, they're kind of bracing for a turndown this year, looking for an uptick in unemployment. Even as they continue to benefit from, you know, the strong consumer spending and higher interest rates. Let's see, we got J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, the same one. Citigroup all said on Friday on earnings calls that they're planning for a mild recession. You know, it was just a year ago that J.P. Morgan and a Bank of America, we're going to have a hurricane of a recession. Now we're mild. It's just they must have gotten in trouble for that and had to change the speak. Just to make sure that that doesn't upset the apple cart, meaning Wall Street. Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan said the company expects a rapid rise in joblessness to start the year, though he acknowledged the prediction is much more conservative than the economic estimates that are out there. Of course it is. You're a bank, and you created a lot of the problems that we're experiencing. So what would you say? J.P. Morgan reported net income $4.5 billion at segment. That's up almost 10% from a year earlier, Dave.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to excuse me. I've got apparently some traffic going by that's Trump he doesn't like. Anyway, you know, these banks enjoying record profits. So, you know, it's rich coming from them. Bank of America up 14.5%. J.P. Morgan up almost 10%. I mean, credit card loans rose 19% at Chase, 13% at Citi Group. I mean, look, banks are enjoying higher interest rates and strong consumer expending, but yet they're expecting the momentum to recede soon. Well, I guess the good news for them, ladies and gentlemen, is that they're raking in the profits while the going is good. We'll see. You know, it's interesting. I saw a related story that looked back to the 2017 inflation scenario when Jerome Powell I'm not sure it was the first time, but he then also used the referring to the inflation situation of that time as transitory. It was fundamentally different. Instead of inflation being way up, you know, it was down, stubbornly below the Fed's 2% target. So the Fed raised interest rates three times as the labor market tightened and the economy was then growing at a moderate pace. The thing that struck my attention was from the former Fed president of Dallas, of the Dallas Fed, Robert Kaplan, showed how tight the labor market was in his particular district at one of the FOMC meetings. He recounted that a metal manufacturer in his district told him he had only two questions for new prospective workers. One, can you get yourself to work and be on time? And two, can you breathe? Yeah, that's pretty tight. Other than that, I guess the statement must have been, you're hired. So good to see the Fed with a I'm not sure it's a sense of humor as much as it is a sense of irony, Melody.
You know what was interesting? You made a comment about our growth. You know, when he started raising interest rates, our economy was only moderate. It wasn't like it was going really gangbusters, but they turned that moderate economy. They said it was, you know, a gangbuster economy, but it really was only a moderate one. And so you had all these problems with just a moderate economy. So the raising and increases, they want that moderate economy to go to, you know, a standstill, basically. And it, so it's hard to believe that so many of the reports that we receive, as positive as they are, reflect something that's not right in.
Indeed.
So, you know, and even the GDP measures that out, you know, so and nobody even addresses these issues. So interesting. Going on, this is I'm not sure. Was it really Putin's ploy to weaponize energy exports, or was it the sanctions that all these nations placed beginning on the oil exports
yes.
and so forth that...
Yes and yes.
Huh?
Yes and yes. Yes, Putin. Yes, Putin wanted to weaponize energy primarily because of the sanctions in response to the sanctions.
Right. So the sanctions is what... So the sanction is who? What comes first, the chicken or the... Was that the chicken or the egg? Was that? So it was his response. So I don't, you know, so we all knew that, you know, they would probably be cutting off the natural gas to Europe. I mean, that was certainly was, especially the Germany, but it was the U.S. who told Germany not to buy from. So
whose fault is it that, so is it really working? Is it really working? Are the sanctions working? I mean, we've seen them put, I don't think if they are working, I don't think they started to work until they actually put the caps on it. Thankfully, Europe has had warmer weather. And with some other supplies coming in from other producers, that has really helped them. And that's really a good thing. And European gas prices on Monday fell to levels that hadn't been seen since 2021. And, of course, the Russian oil industry is having trouble adapting to a European embargo and the cap on its crude. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting to play out. I don't know how much, you know, what they're charging for other countries for their oil. And but it's interesting to say. And you know what? I'm just happy ours has gone down. I don't care about anybody else's. I'm just glad ours went down, Dave.
For now, anyway.
Yeah.
There's some evidence coming out of that part of the world that the sanctions had been begun to start having an effect on Russia's finances, or evidence that it was beginning to break. I mean, their federal budget now has begun to their deficit has begun to increase. I don't think it's as devastating right now as anyone thought it or hoped it might be. But I think the real challenge for Putin is going to be, you know, a year or two after this fighting stops, whenever that may be, and how the rest of the world reacts to, one, the rebuilding of Ukraine during that period, and two, to what extent they're going to allow him and Russia back into the international community, both in terms of diplomacy and economy. Who knows? I mean, we'll have to wait and see how this plays out over the coming months and years. I mean, there's so much uncertainty surrounding it. And again, it's Russia. So the numbers we do get are very unreliable, I believe.
Kind of like the U.S. and everybody else.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. It transcends China. It transcends what they're getting from the U.S. And other democracies. China. But yeah, China. And I mean, now China's one that's buying more oil and gas from Russia right now. But that's about, that amount is about one-tenth less than that, I believe, of what it used to export to Europe before the war. So, and it's apparently selling about half the global benchmark price on the long and costly routes to China and India, who's Russia's other main post-war or post-invasion customer. And they're said to be eating into Russia's thinning profits as well. So,
The used vehicle market now has a huge hangover from August 2020 till 2022. Retail prices spiked by mind-boggling amounts, an average 40%, according to Cox. Yeah, Cox Automotive, it's 53%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But now there's increasing resistance in the market against these prices, and Cox says used vehicle retail sales in December dropped 10% year over year. Wholesale prices, reflecting the cost for dealers, that's dropped about 15% year over year in December. According to Manheim, the largest auto auction house and a unit of Cox, retail prices have dropped too, but have been stickier than wholesale prices as dealers are trying to hold the line and slow walk the process. The average used vehicle listing price dropped just 4.3% in December, the peak in April to $27,140, and that was basically unchanged in November. It was about 3 years ago, the average listing price was $19,900. So it's kind of hard to wrap your head around these kind of price increases. And, you know, thankfully, most people can continue to drive what they already have. Any dealers have made hay while they could. And, of course, you see those wholesale prices get bid up at auctions. And they were confident that they could sell those vehicles at higher prices. People were willing to pay. And, you know, just like anything else, prices exploded. People don't wait. They just think things are just going to go forever high. But now, I guess you call it a hangover, Dave.
Melody, if you don't mind, I'm going to jump ahead here to this Gemini Earn.
Okay, please do.
Fiasco. Customers who put their cash and cryptocurrency into this company Gemini Earn thought it was secure, akin to a savings account at a bank. Gemini Earn is an interest-bearing lending program that offers daily interest rates on several dozen digital assets. When you stake cryptocurrencies on Gemini Earn, your assets will be loaned to third-party borrowers and at the same time generate cryptocurrency interest for you in return. Now, what was different here, Peter Chen is an example here. He's a data scientist in San Diego, started putting money in Earn in late 2021. He said it sounded really safe at the time. And Chen said he was reassured when Gemini customer service sent him an email and mentioned FDIC insurance. The protection that keeps bank deposits safe in the U.S.
Lie.
Turns out his money, since converted to crypto, wasn't safe. He put about $18,000 of his own hard-earned money into Earn, and now he can't get it out. He's one of 340,000 customers who have $900 million locked up at Gemini Earn. That's according to the SEC. He was loving the 8% return last February. That's the interest he got on Gemini stable coins called GUSD. Of course, then Chen watched the collapse of another stable coin called Luna and got nervous. And that's when he asked Gemini, "Is my money safe?" And they said, "All fiat currency held by Gemini to redeem your GUSD is held by our partner financial institutions in a secure account and is eligible for FDIC." In a word, Melody, not true.
Yeah. And that's the sad thing when you just real quick, when you look at those 340,000 customers, 900 million isn't a whole lot, but it's a lot of customers who didn't have the money to lose. So that's the way I look at it. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off this last segment, taking care of other client business. You can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, let's start with Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal, who writes today that it's been a good start to the year for risk assets. After getting clobbered last year, the S&P, well, not counting today, it was up, about 4% so far in January. The NASDAQ, that gain is closer to 6%. More importantly, gold is up 5%, and silver had been up 1%, probably even today, after today's correction. Well, one chart that Wiesenthal has been watching during these moves is the three-month to two-year Treasury yield spread, which is in a deep inversion, just like the 10-year to two-year inversion, signaling that before too long, the Fed's hiking is going to turn into rate cuts. So what, he asks, are the circumstances that would merit these rate cuts? An extremely rapid cooling of inflation, a hard landing or recession, perhaps. That seems to be one of the big worries at Davos right now. Two-thirds of the elitists polled by the World Economic Forum in Switzerland expect a worldwide recession this year. Another poll of the global the elite global executives conducted by PricewaterhouseCoopers registered its worst growth reading since the poll started being conducted over, well, it looks like 11 years ago. What's interesting in the U.S. amid this pessimism, what Wiesenthal suggests, is that for all the recession talk these days, right now the data are, if anything, showing, well, the opposite. And not only did the headline unemployment rate, understated as it is, just fall to a 50-year low last month, Wiesenthal says there are other indicators that may be showing positive momentum, despite what the naysayers are saying. At FreightWaves, for example, Craig Fuller writes, early freight data and channel checks would suggest the freight market could be stabilizing with clearer skies ahead. Over the past week, he continues, we've spoken with numerous freight executives who have mentioned that the first 2 weeks of the new year are shaping up better than expected. Well, meanwhile, various measures of consumer activity remain, well, robust, to use Wiesenthal's words. Recently, he points out, Neil Dutta joked only somewhat tongue-in-cheek that Avatar box office receipts are probably a better gauge of economic activity than the ISM, Purchasing Managers Index. And it looks like those are coming in hot as well, the box office receipts, that is. Same time, Apollo chief economist Torsten Slok recently mentioned several other consumer measures like air traffic, hotel bookings, Broadway attendance, restaurant reservations, even New York City mobility measures that are still trending in the right direction. And on the corporate side, commercial paper outstanding is trending in the right direction. Meanwhile, from a global perspective, you have the suddenly positive impulse from China's reopening through the magnitude of the impact, though the magnitude of the impact is, of course, yet to be determined. So Wiesenthal concludes today that while executives fret about recession and gloom continues to dominate the headlines, at least this moment, anyway, there seems to be, to use a phrase people don't use much anymore, some green shoots in the economy. He concludes that if central banks like the Fed are committed to a recession as the ultimate tool to bury inflation, then that should put a cap on anyone's optimism. Thank you, Joe. Okay, a quick primer that I promised. The federal debt limit restricts the total amount of money that the Treasury Department can legally borrow at any point in time. When Congress authorizes spending that exceeds the government revenues, the result is a deficit. Financing shortfalls, Treasury has to issue bonds to private investors, such as pension funds, foreign governments, you and me, to make up the difference. These securities are collectively known as debt held by the public. Now, Treasury also owes money to other parts of the federal government, such as the Social Security Trust Funds. Those obligations are known as intra-governmental debt. But both types of debt are subject to the same debt limit. The statutory debt limit sets a ceiling on the amount that Treasury can borrow to cover the government's commitments that are already owed. And that's something important to remember, however you feel about spending and taxation. But when Treasury can no longer borrow and exhaust other available methods to make payments, the federal government would eventually be forced to miss, delay, or even reduce payments that it's obligated to make. That, of course, would call in the question the full faith and credit of the U.S. as an entity that always meets its financial obligations. Since the initial debt limit was set in 1939 at $45 billion, it's been increased dozens of times under Republican and Democratic presidents, and it currently sits at, yes, $31.4 trillion. Now, upon hitting the debt limit, the Treasury Department has the authority to engage, as Melody mentioned, in so-called extraordinary measures that allow the government to continue paying all of its bills in full and on time. Those measures, however, are limited and thus only temporary. Once they're exhausted, Treasury only has the cash in its bank account and incoming revenue to pay its bills. Given today's large federal deficit, that won't last too long. So what are the consequences of failing to raise the debt limit in time? Well, the reality is that nobody really knows. We don't know what would happen to financial markets if such a scenario unfolded because, well, it's never happened, well, at least on a large scale. U.S. debt is frequently used, however, by global financial markets as a form of collateral. Because of its history, is one of the safest assets in the world. If that debt starts to be priced based on our nation's willingness to pay rather than its ability to pay, the ramifications could be catastrophic in a black swan sense. Our What of Russia of Gold and Silver blog this Friday will cover this important policy topic in a tad more detail. Last today, our American Survival newsletter has hit the streets again. It features Doug Nolan's Credit Bubble Bulletin blog on market messaging and Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's food for thought on computer vision syndrome. Melody's financial market recap shows a sterling week for gold and silver, and I have an article on the 2023 Edelman Trust Barometer, which finds people now fear for their economic future without a trustworthy safety net. Only 40% of respondents say they and their families will be better off in 5 years. That's a 10-point decline from just last year. Further, a lack of faith in societal institutions triggered by economic anxiety, disinformation, mass class divide, and a failure of leadership has brought us to where we are today, deeply and dangerously polarized. Now, the latest barometer is the Edelman Organization's 23rd annual Trust and Credibility Survey since its founding in 1952. The report was intended to coincide with the start of this year's annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The research is conducted by the Edelman Trust Institute through 30-minute online interviews with over 32,000 respondents in 28 countries. Among the principal findings and opinions contained in this year's survey are: business is the only institution seen as competent and ethical. Since last year's survey, trust in business gained 6 points in the U.S. alone. That's big. 53% of respondents globally say that their countries are more divided today than in the past. And CEOs are obligated to improve economic optimism and hold divisive forces accountable. Let's still drill down on a few of these notions. First, business continues to gain trust around the world. Among survey respondents, the response, "my employer," was 25 points higher in trust than government or elected officials. That's huge. Edelman CEO Richard Edelman says business is the sole institution seen as competent and ethical and is expected to act. As Mike Allen of Axios points out, CEOs are now under pressure to take the lead on a wide range of societal issues that government is no longer trusted to manage. Notably, the most reliable source of information for employees that Edelman found was the good old company newsletter. Edelman first saw data supporting the essential role of employer communications during the pandemic, when they found high demand for frequent communications about health-related topics. Since then, quote, "we have asked about the relative credibility of employer communications across topics and have found it the most believable source, no matter which subject we ask about." Now, government, by contrast, is viewed as unethical and incompetent. In fact, business holds a 54-point lead over government in competence and 30 points in ethics. Edelman Vice Chair and U.S. COO Dave Sampson observes, "low trust in government media has aided the ascent of business. And now societal leadership is a core function of business." This is a trend we've talked about in the last 2 years this program. The report says CEOs are expected to use their resources to hold divisive forces accountable. 72%, almost three quarters, want business to defend facts and expose questionable science being used to justify bad social policy. And almost two-thirds, 64%, want companies to support politicians and media outlets that build consensus and cooperation. Globally, it says CEOs are expected to take a public stand and take business action on key issues, with 85% expected to play a role in strengthening our social fabric. To be sure, society's social fabric has a major tear. Roughly two-thirds of respondents, 65%, say the lack of civility and mutual respect today is the worst I have ever seen. Almost as many, at 62%, believe the social fabric that once held this country together, wherever you live, has grown too weak to serve as a foundation for unity and common purpose. It's astounding. Scary, too. The four forces that the trust barometer says have led to this massive polarization, well, they are economic anxieties, institutional imbalance, mass class divide, and the battle for truth. It says a shared media environment has given way to echo chambers, making it harder to collaboratively solve problems. media is no longer trusted, particularly social media. In fact, it says we've become so ingrained in our own ideologies and sense of tribalism that if a person strongly disagreed with our own point of view, only 30% would help them if they were in need. Only 20% would be willing to live in the same neighborhood with them, and only 20% would be willing to have them as a coworker. Unbelievably sad. And all this despite the survey finding that polarization only worsens our fears. The report found that if our divisions are not adequately addressed, these are the likely consequences in order of fear. Worsening prejudice and discrimination, slower economic development, violence in the streets, inability to address societal changes, and increased financial suffering. Survey respondents in this year's report point to four primary ways that our institutions should move forward to try to improve life in general. Business is expected to act. As the most trusted institution, and this is first and foremost, business should leverage its comparative advantage to inform debate and deliver solutions. Okay, collaborate with government. Business and government can and should build consensus and collaborate to deliver results that push us towards a more just, secure, and thriving society. Restore economic optimism, and in my mind, advocate for the truth. Be a reliable source of information. Promote civil discourse and hold false information sources accountable. 2023 Trust Barometer is truly insightful and revealing. I did check it out if you have a chance. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I think I'm going to be off on Thursday, but I will return next Tuesday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to your loyal listeners for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.